Neil Catskill.
Live from the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, state politics meet City Hall. Albany lawmakers are weighing in on the New York City mayoral race. Plus, a new poll could give Democrats a boost. The New York Public News Network's Andrew Waite and Jimmy Vielkind have the story coming up. The Big Eddy Film Festival is back in Narrowsburg. From Catskill creatives to rural shorts and student films, the festival showcases how local voices resonate on the big screen. We'll talk with Delaware Valley Arts Alliance Executive Director Ariel Schamberg about the power of storytelling rooted right here in our community. The Wayne County Arts Alliance is wrapping up the season with its end-of-summer art auction. This year's centerpiece? A chair. Hilton reporter Valerie Manzi has more. Plus, local economic perspective from James B. Huntington. Coming up after the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. As wars rage in Gaza, Sudan, and Ukraine, world leaders are gathering this week at the UN for the annual General Assembly high-level debate. The UN Secretary General is urging diplomats to get serious about promoting peace. NPR's Michelle Kellerman has more.
Secretary General Antonio Guterres says he has more than 150 meetings planned with world leaders this week, and he intends to push them to get serious about peace.
And this is an opportunity we cannot miss. One week offers every possibility for dialogue and mediation.
President Trump is expected to speak on Tuesday. The Trump administration has cut funding and pulled out of some UN agencies, but Guterres says the U.S. remains a central player at the UN and has the carrots and sticks needed to help end conflicts. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News.
As the UN General Assembly convenes, more nations are recognizing a Palestinian state. Yesterday, Australia, Britain, Canada, and Portugal announced they would do so. France is expected to follow suit this week. Israel has condemned this action. President Trump attended the memorial service yesterday in Arizona for conservative activist Charlie Kirk. The event was part memorial service, but also appeared to be a political rally. During his remarks, Trump said he will make a fresh announcement at the White House later today about a health condition.
I think we found an answer to autism. How about that? Autism tomorrow. We're going to be talking in the Oval Office in the White House about autism, how it happens so we won't let it happen anymore, and how to get at least somewhat better when you have it.
Health experts who study autism say it is misleading to reduce the cause of autism to a single factor. Stocks opened mixed this morning as Pfizer announced plans to acquire a smaller drug company. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average fell about 140 points in early trading.
Pfizer says it will spend close to $5 billion to acquire the drug development company Metsera. The company is yet to win approval for any of its products, but it has several obesity drugs in the pipeline. Google is facing another antitrust trial this week to decide what to do about its monopoly advertising business. The Justice Department seeking to break up that business, but a similar push directed at Google's search engine business resulted in a court order for less sweeping remedies. Both Pfizer and Google are financial supporters of NPR. The Federal Reserve's newest governor, Stephen Myron, speaks this afternoon to the Economic Club of New York. When the central bank cut its benchmark interest rate by a quarter percentage point last week, Myron cast the lone vote for a deeper cut. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
You're listening to NPR News. Russian President Vladimir Putin says his country is willing to extend a nuclear treaty with the U.S. for 1 year, but only if the Trump administration agrees. The pact is the New START treaty. Currently, it's supposed to expire next February. Putin's offer would prolong it until early 2027. Putin says he wants to avoid a strategic arms race. A Vatican trial that exposed corruption, espionage, and vendettas at some of the highest levels of the Holy See is being reopened today through an appeals process. NPR's Ruth Sherlock reports.
It is widely known as the Vatican's trial of the century, a court case based on an investigation into the Vatican's failed $400 million investment in a luxury London property. The defendants were accused of trying to swindle the Holy See for millions of dollars, while they insisted the Vatican had just made poor business decisions. 9 of the 10 defendants were convicted in 2023. Now, lawyers are making a fresh appeal, and being admitted into evidence are thousands of pages of WhatsApp text and audio messages between some of the key players that have since become public. Critics say they suggest questionable conduct by Vatican police and prosecutors and even the late Pope Francis. Ruth Sherlock, NPR News, Rome.
The Jewish New Year, or Rosh Hashanah, begins today. It's considered as a time of prayer and self-reflection. It opens the 10 days of high holidays that culminate with the Day of Atonement, or Yom Kippur. The Jewish holidays are observed in home rituals and synagogue services. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Sony Pictures Classics with Eleanor the Great, a film directed by Scarlett Johansson, starring June Squibb as a 94-year-old woman who tells a tale that begins to take on a life of its own, in theaters starting Friday.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. State politicians are getting involved in the New York City mayoral race, and a new poll has some good news for Democrats. The New York Public News Network's Andrew Waite and Jimmy Vielkind discussed the latest developments on Friday.
Hey, Jimmy.
Hey, Andrew.
So some top New York State officials weighed in on the New York City mayoral race this week, and they seem to be coalescing around a single candidate. What happened, and what do you think the effect's going to be?
Well, we saw both Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie and Governor Kathy Hochul give their endorsements to Assemblymember Zoran Mamdani. Now, you know, maybe in a normal year, it wouldn't be a headline, top Democratic officials back leader of Democratic primary. But especially for Governor Hochul, who got most of the attention here, the politics are an unlikely pairing. So Hochul is a moderate centrist. Mamdani is an unabashed progressive and run with the support of the Democratic Socialists of America. So that immediately drew lots of questions and raised some eyebrows. But I think that the calculus is quite clear. You know, Mamdani gets the imprimatur of the establishment and gets another door that's shut to two other Democrats who are still in the general election race, though not running on the Democratic Party line. Those are Andrew Cuomo and Eric Adams, the current mayor of New York City.
Though it's not clear how much this will actually move people to the polls, and I saw some jokes that since Hochul's registered to vote in Buffalo, her endorsement's not even worth a single vote. This seems really more to be a sign that top leaders in the Democratic Party are starting to coalesce around a single party nominee.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think there will actually be more to come. Two of the big people that we're still watching for are Hakeem Jeffries, the leader of the Democratic Caucus in the House of Representatives, and U.S. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer. Both of those men come from Brooklyn. Now, Hochul and Schumer and Jeffries had sort of different calculations. Hochul is looking at a potential re-election in 2026. Mamdani is the darling of progressives in New York City. That's a coveted voting block that could really be helpful to Hochul. Some listeners might remember she had a closer-than-expected run in 2022. But Schumer and Jeffries see things differently. They're looking at a broader scale. You know, both of them are trying to win back congressional majorities. And to do that, they need to win races in purple areas in suburbs. So Mamdani doesn't play necessarily quite as well there.
Right. So do you think, especially for someone like Governor Hochul, who you mentioned will be running in 2026 for re-election, is there the risk of any sort of backlash coming from an endorsement of Mamdani?
Yeah, I think there will be some of that. The big question is whether the progressive boost is going to be worth sort of the drop off on the right. Moderates, independents, Republicans, take your pick. Already on Thursday, we heard New York Democratic Party Chairman Jay Jacobs, who comes from Long Island on Nassau County, one of those purple areas. He said very pointedly he will not be endorsing Mamdani. And he said he really didn't like Mamdani's association with the Democratic Socialists of America. You know, to say nothing of Republicans who have been livid and kind of pouncing on this like red meat ever since the announcement came in a New York Times op-ed on Sunday night. So I talked with Assemblymember Jarrett Gandolfo. He's from Suffolk County. And here's the way he put it.
You know, if I'm talking to my neighbors who are on the fence, I'm going to tell them, look, I don't think you're happy with what's going on in the city. I don't think you're happy with a socialist mayor. But Kathy Hochul supports him. She endorsed him.
The other thing to consider is how this impacts Hochul's relationship with Donald Trump. I recently wrote about how their relationship was actually in a pretty decent place. Trump said that he gets along with Hochul. He didn't send the National Guard to New York because Hochul told him not to. That's a big contrast with other areas. But his reaction to the endorsement of Mamdani was pretty stark. He said on social media that he's going to rethink sending funding to the state of New York if Mamdani gets elected, now that Hochul's behind him.
And of course, the relationship between New York City mayor and New York governor is also an important one. So what do you think about state policy here, especially with many of Mamdani's platforms are going to require funding from state government, are going to require that good relationship with Albany? Does this mean smooth sailing if he becomes New York City's mayor now that he has Hochul's endorsement?
Abso-positively not. No. Absolutely no guarantees here.
Right.
And Hochul stressed that. There's still lots of disagreement, even when she was talking about the endorsement. Take a listen.
Yeah, I disagree with many statements, and I've said that. But also, I believe that we need someone who's going to be open-minded and optimistic and have an attitude, a can-do attitude that I share about knowing that the city's best days still do lie ahead.
So the biggest point of contention that I see coming is over whether or not to raise income taxes. Mamdani's other endorser this week was Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie. He is somebody whose Democratic conference has repeatedly pushed to raise taxes during state budget talks. Hochul, of course, has blanched at that. She has said that she's concerned that the state's tax base is already pretty top heavy, and that if you increase levies on the richest New Yorkers, they're going to move to other states, and that's going to hurt the tax base. So I would watch over the next few months to see how this really plays out. I don't make any predictions right now. But one thing that I think is telling is that Mamdani, when asked, did not offer an endorsement for the reelection of Hochul. Now, granted, it's very, very far away, so I wouldn't expect an endorsement at this point. But I think what that means is that his endorsement will be in play depending upon how helpful Hochul is in enacting his agenda and what stances she takes in the legislative session that starts next year if Mamdani's elected.
Yeah, for sure. That'll be interesting to watch. And we've obviously been talking about the 2026 gubernatorial election here. And Governor Hochul got some good news this week on that front. What were the highlights?
Well, a Siena University poll showed that her favorability is above water for the first time in quite some time. And her lead over Representative Elise Stefanik, a Republican from the North Country, who's thought to be the most likely Republican challenger, grew from an August survey which showed that Stefanik was within 15 points. So good news for Hochul all around. But one thing that stood out to me was a question about whether voters think the state is on the right track or moving in the wrong direction. For the first time in 4 years, Andrew, that was actually positive. It was 42 to 41. So that's not statistically significant. You can call it roughly a tie. But the importance of that measure is it really shows the zeitgeist or the mood of the voters. It's a combination of their thoughts about the economy and their economic security, and just also their general contentment with the government and with the official representation they had. So the important contrast is that number in whether New York is on the right track is positive to even. But when you look at the question, is the nation on the right track or going in the wrong direction? It's 2-1 going in the wrong direction. So there's starting to be a real split that emerges, which it seems, according to some analysts, will benefit incumbent Democrats, right? These elections that are coming up, we're going to see Democrats saying, look at Washington, look at Donald Trump. This is the party of Trump. Vote for Democrats. But at the same time, you're going to see Republicans trying to ask voters, are you happy with your lot in life? Are you happy with the existing policies? And if you're not happy, it is Democrats who have brought you those policies. So, you know, all of this stuff is gelling together. I like to say that politics is tidal. You know, the tides move year by year, the electorate moves, and then the officials just kind of surf or ride on the tides. Here's how Fred Thiel, a former assembly member who represents Suffolk County and who was a member of both the Republican and the Democratic parties over his time in Albany, here's how he put what's happening.
they don't think anything's headed in the right direction, but they're less negative about the state than they are the federal government.
So, you know, poll spokesman Steven Greenberg emphasized that this is just a measure and a snapshot in time, as all polls are. But, you know, for now, it's something to watch, and it's something that seems to work in favor of the Democrats.
That was the New York Public News Network's Andrew Waite and Jimmy Vielkind. We'll take a break, and when we come back, local economic perspective from our own James B. Huntington. You're listening to Radio Chatskill.
You know the feeling. Someone offers you what they think is constructive criticism. And you? You immediately go on the defensive.
I definitely, initially, was like, no, you're wrong. So, I mean, yeah, I definitely felt some defensiveness in that moment.
Why our minds resist feedback and how to become more receptive to it. This week on Hidden Brain from NPR. Today at 1 on Radio Catskill.
I'm Mimi Bradley, Radio Catskill's development manager, reminding you that a great way to keep public radio here in the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania is by becoming a Sound Supporter. Sound Supporters give small amounts, $20, $30, $50 a month or more, that add up to a big help. Plus, Sound Supporters get special thank yous, like drawings for tickets to events in our community throughout the year. Become a Sound Supporter. Go to wjffradio.org.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno, and it's Monday. Working 9 to 5. Time to check in with James B. Huntington, local author and economist, for some local economic perspective. James B., good morning. Happy Monday.
Good morning, Tim. Good morning, listeners.
Well, let's kick it off with what happened with interest rates last week. Lo and behold, it looks like they dropped a bit.
Yes, they did. For the first time this year, they reduced them by 0.25%, which is 0.25, a quarter point. So they had to deal with the problems of inflation hanging on and being higher than they would like, but the labor market getting worse, unemployment going up, and the revelation that we have really not had many new jobs for about 4 months now. Net new non-farm payroll positions have averaged something under 50,000 instead of the 100 to 300,000 we saw before. So they reduced them. The key thing, as we will find out later in this broadcast, was that the chief of the Fed said that we would have probably interest rate decreases in October and November, and December, rather, the two times the Fed meets later this year, as well as the one last week, which was well expected.
And so what do these new interest rates mean for your wallet?
Well, there could be some real changes. It's surprising, as small as it seems, a quarter of a percent, there could be some real differences. One is credit card rates. If you are paying credit card interest and you have a card that pays the rate, or charges the rate rather, depending on what the prime rate is, the prime rate is going to go down with this thing. So your interest rates will probably be reduced. Mortgages, of course, for existing fixed rate mortgages, you won't have any changes. If you do have variable rate, it may go down a little bit. If you're in the market for a mortgage, if you're going to have one soon, then it can make a real difference. It may seem stunning if you haven't ran these numbers, but a reduction of a quarter of a point can be $150 a month for buying a typical house, that much less if mortgage rates go down. And they do tend to follow along with the interest rates that they were cutting here. So the other downside is that if you have a savings account, something that's money market, which many of them are, you may be getting less interest. It depends on what your bank does, but there's a fair chance that your interest rate will go down by this same percentage.
Yeah, so even though some rates on mortgages might go down, they don't always work in lockstep, but some folks are saying they could still get down to maybe 6% or so by the end of the year?
Could very well. Yes, that's a realistic thing. It will depend on some other factors, but the base interest rate they're dealing on is now low enough to support 6% mortgages if they think it's appropriate.
And the average rate on a 30-year mortgage was 6.35% last week, its lowest level in nearly a year, according to mortgage buyer Freddie Mac. Let's talk about what's going on with employment. Why are more college-educated people becoming unemployed in the long term?
This has been a trend that's stepped up really in the last 10 years, where college graduates have gone from around 2000 to having the smallest chance of being long-term unemployed, which is out for over 6 months. And that was sort of level at times when other ones were decreasing in the mid-teens the last decade, but they're going up now and they're actually higher than the categories of high school graduates or some college or high school dropouts. The reason being is that a lot of the positions they tend to get have had weaker and weaker prospects. That ChatGPT and other AI programs have cut things down. But previously, over the last 5 or 10 years, we had accounting software and other forms of AI, things used for finance and merchandise planning, for example, have made more skilled workers obsolete. So it's not a good time, and we're finding out the depth of that. We've sort of known that anecdotally for some time, but it's holding true for regular unemployment and more for the long-term thing, as a decreasing need for workers, unfortunately, can prevent existing or unemployed ones from getting back in for remarkable lengths of time.
Let's talk about jobs, because they went on jobs. A performance improvement plan, or PIP, what does that mean if you're put on one?
Well, time was that when you got a performance improvement plan, that your management was giving them to you in good faith, and the idea was they were telling you specifically what you had to improve to keep your job, and you could, with knowing that, you could do that and make well. But now it's getting to be something warning you, a precursor to getting fired entirely. So you might be put on one soon if any of these apply. You've just received a poor performance review. Your manager is putting your mistakes in writing. You're being left out of critical projects and meetings and the hottest stuff in your group for no apparent reason. So you may get one. And if you do, things you should do are, first of all, assess your situation. Find out really where you are and what you might be doing. And second of all, look for ways you can improve. Follow the instructions. Do what you can. However, you should probably begin a job search. Because one statistic they have here is that only 10 to 20% successfully come out of being in a performance improvement plan and keep their role long term. It's very often just a way of documenting for HR possible lawsuit purposes that you were not good enough to keep your job and that you were deficient, in other words. So watch out. It's bad news, but you can help your situation by getting out or starting to look for other positions while it's going on.
And take a deep breath. Okay, let's move over to tech. What classic technology is helping with children's smartphone overuse?
Well, landlines have been taking a bad press, and people are not taking them as seriously as they once did. This piece I have here describes them as obsolescent, almost getting obsolete. But they're still quite available. They can be relatively cheap. And if you have one in the shared space of your house, it can provide some of the advantages of children between 2 and 12, they mention, who might be already asking you if they can have a cell phone. If you don't want to, then if you have a landline in a common area in your house, not in one of their rooms, they'll still be able to communicate with people like friends and grandparents and what have you without truly needing a smartphone to make calls with. So,
long live the landline.
It's an easy thing to get. Yes, you can still get normal plans for them, and it may be just the thing until they're truly ready for a cell phone.
Oh, also good for adults in the Catskills. All right, what's the new $500,000-plus car, and what can it do, and why does it cost so much?
The big news in the car world here is that Ferrari is bringing back the Testarossa.
Ah.
That was their absolute highest top-of-the-line version. And they're coming up with the what they call the 849 Testarossa. It's a plug-in hybrid. How about that?
Oh, wow.
It has an 830-horsepower gas engine, but it also has three electric motors for over 1,000 horsepower. It will be capable of reaching 62 miles an hour from a standing start in 2.3 seconds, and it will be able to go as fast as 205 miles per hour. This is going to be out next year. They are already planning on making deliveries to Europe. People in the U.S. should be able to get them by the end of 2026. The costs we have are about $530,000 for a sedan, a four-door version, and about $500,000 for the coupe. So you will be able to get these things if this is your sort of consideration. And in fact, often cars like that have had horrendous gas mileage, but it would be much better if it is a hybrid. So something to think about if you're in the market for this sort of thing. Yes, contact your dealer.
Oh, boy. Guess we'll have to see how the numbers do before we can consider buying a car that expensive. Let's talk about those numbers. What were the prices this morning, and how did they change?
The numbers are helping. If it's possible for numbers to help with your situation, they are doing their part. Over the past week, the changes are gold early this morning, $3,721, up $79. Even stronger, it's just going up and up and up. Silver is alongside, and it's now $43.70, up $1.59. The ratio shrunk a little between the two to 85 to 1, and it's following gold. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, 46,153, which is up 317. Another solid week. It's looking very good overall, as is even more so lately, NASDAQ average, 24,524, up 2383. probably good news on AI, any other technical things in this tech-heavy measure have looked especially good this past week. Oil, West Texas Intermediate, $63.04. That's up 7 cents. That's low, but the pumps have been disappointing for some reason. Their gas is really not as cheap as I would expect to see it. But it is low, so it's possible that the pump price will be going down. Bitcoin, $112,562. That's down $2,381. It fell back, gave back about 3/4 of its gain last week. British pound, 1.3497, down 0.8 cents. It's looking weaker for problems over there. The euro, though, 1.1765, up 0.25 cents. Not a problem. The Japanese 100 yen sat still at its 68 cents. So what made the difference here overall was not the quarter point cut in interest rates, which was really baked into the cake, which everyone anticipated, but it was Powell's statement that in October and December there would probably be rate cuts. He can't know that, but he's saying there will be more than a random chance of happening there. Only one direction for most of these things. People are still buying them. It's looks to me like there's so much money, more money seems to create ever more money.
Okay. All right. James B. Huntington, keeping an eye on the money. He is our local author and economist and gives us local economic perspective every Monday. James B., thank you.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you, listeners.
We'll see you next Monday. Keep an eye on the big screen. The Big Eddie Film Festival starts this week. We'll find out what's coming up right after a break. You're listening to Radio Chatskill.
This week on the Retro Cocktail Hour, we'll hear Les Baxter's The Primitive and the Passionate and the exotic sounds of Arthur Lyman, plus the pianos in paradise of Ferrante and Teicher. I'm Daryl Brogdon. Join me where the music is always shaken, not stirred. The Retro Cocktail Hour. Wednesday night at 7, here on Radio Catskill.
I'm Stephen Dubner. I'm the next Freakonomics Radio. Has America lost its appetite for the common good?
We're not looking for the nice guy anymore. We're looking for somebody who is ready to take down the system.
And can our political wounds be healed by love?
I will not let the press, the media, politicians tell me I've got to hate my brother-in-law.
That's next time on Freakonomics Radio. Tuesday at 1 p.m. on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The Delaware Valley Arts Alliance is rolling out the red carpet for the 13th annual Big Eddie Film Festival this week. It's a cinematic celebration of countercurrent narratives, and it's got the juncture of film, art, and rural imagination for all of us, from student shorts to documentaries rooted in the Catskills. The festival continues to showcase how stories from the Upper Delaware region can resonate far beyond. Joining us is Ariel Schamberg, Executive Director of DVAA, to talk about what's coming up and the power of local storytelling on the big screen. Ariel, good morning.
Good morning, Tim. Great to be with you.
Thanks for joining us. And before we get into, you know, what's coming up, tell us how you guys make these film selections for the film festival every year. What criteria do you use to choose?
Well, as you so beautifully captured, the festival's mission is centered around celebrating countercurrent narratives and the rural imagination. So we do it through a multi-pronged way. We're always looking out for films. We have relationships with filmmakers and distributors and producers who keep us in the loop on productions they're working on. We use great platforms like Film Freeway. You know, we have, happy to say, a legacy. After now, this will be our 14th year of the Big Eddy Film Festival, of working with wonderful filmmakers over the years. So they come back to us with new projects. And a great team of advisors that recommend films, that keep on the lookout, whether it be at festivals across the country or just independent things that they get excited and they think would really appeal to our community. We're always programming with our community in mind.
Are there any particular themes or trends you noticed with the films this year? Anything that surprised you?
Certainly, a leaning by filmmakers to the horror genre. I think we're seeing it across the spectrum and in major movie theaters and streaming platforms. The darker side of things is sometimes with a twist of the supernatural is coming to folks' mind. But really just independent expression, stories that don't get told. People have the means, have the technology to tell those stories in a much easier way. And we're excited to bring that to our community. I'd say the other thing that stood out for us in our programming this year was we wanted to really celebrate and pay attention to the voices of young people. And we start off with Saturday morning with Kids Make Films, celebrating the work of students who participated in Ice House projects and Bethel Woods' respective film programs. We then go to a Norwegian film that on Saturday afternoon at the Narrowsburg Union that takes a look at youth who have gone to a dog sledding school in Norway as a way to get in touch with themselves and counter some of the challenges of what it is like to grow up as a young person through Europe. But really, universal themes connecting to where all youth are the struggles that all youth are dealing with today.
There are also some student short films as well.
There are. This is, I think, the first year that we had such an incredible crop of films by student filmmakers, students from programs as nearby as Vassar College in Ithaca, and then really across the United States. And we wanted to give our audiences a chance to get a glimpse at some future visionaries, maybe the next Catherine Bigelow or Steven Spielberg, or maybe even on the wilder side, maybe the next Tarantino.
All right. And starting off on Thursday, we're pleased to be part of this too. It's your Big Eddy Film Festival Ignites session, which is a screening of the film Good Night and Good Luck, the 20th anniversary screening of that film. Talk about that and kind of the themes of that film today.
How did that get to be 20 years?
I know, right?
Amazing. So a couple of years ago, we started a new tradition, something we're really proud of, and that is using the power of coming together to experience storytelling, cinematic storytelling, as a way to ignite support and awareness around important causes and important nonprofits that are doing great work. And this year, we couldn't think of a better nonprofit service organization to spotlight and drive some funds towards other than our very own Radio Catskill.
Well, we are grateful for that. Thank you.
And, you know, you all connect us. You keep us informed of the important issues of the time, both locally, regionally, and globally. And as we were thinking about what film would really honor what Radio Catskill does for us, it came to our attention that it was the 20th anniversary of
the George Clooney directed film Good Night, Good Luck, which focuses on the radio broadcaster and journalist Edward R. Murrow's response to Senator Joseph McCarthy amidst the height of the Red Scare, and how journalism really held the powers of government accountable for what was transpiring during the, that difficult period. And I think in a times we are in where people maybe feel under attack by or pressured by their own government, we need to look back at a time where our journalists, our citizens used the powers at hand to stand up and resist and counter those narratives. So we're really excited.
Yeah, and that is Thursday at 7 at the Tustin Theater. There's also going to be a talk back afterward with some local journalists who happen to be involved with Radio Catskill. Pete Madden, who's our board president, is the senior producer for ABC World News with David Muir and managing editor of First Amendment Watch, the nonprofit at the Arthur L. Carter Journalism Institute at New York University. Elizabeth Hope Williams, also a board member. She's a documentary filmmaker for PBS Frontline. And Steve Yacino, an Emmy-nominated documentary producer and journalist who's previously worked at the New York Times and Bloomberg, who's on our community advisory board. And they're going to be talking about all of these themes, which you mentioned, which is you're not only holding power, media holding power to accountable journalistic integrity, but the dangers of unchecked power and misinformation and free speech. Sort of timely, I would say.
Rather so. And I couldn't have said it better myself, Tim.
Well, we're going to take a quick break and we're going to come back with more of the upcoming schedule for Big Eddy Film Festival and highlight some of these things that are coming up. There's a long list and we'll get to some of them with Ariel Schamberg from the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance. After a quick break, you're listening to Radio Catskill.
In 1989, the Supreme Court ruled that flag burning is symbolic speech protected by the First Amendment. President Donald Trump issued an executive order to reverse that.
Because the people in this country don't want to see our American flag burned and spit on.
The Trump executive order forces the question, what's more worthy of protection, a national symbol or the values it represents? That's on the next On Point.
Monday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno, and we're speaking with Ariel Schamberg, who is the executive director of the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance, about the Big Eddy Film Festival, which is starting this week, a full schedule. Let's talk about what's coming up on Friday, the big premiere day there.
Absolutely. So we first invite folks to join us in Krauss Hall for one of our favorite shorts programs. We call it Countercurrent Shorts. And this is a chance to see work by filmmakers and artists who are working in film. It includes Evie McKenna, Elizabeth Ennis, Matt Whitman, Willow Gatewood. This is kind of a chance for more experimental film to be discovered. We're also going to be doing a panel discussion with a number of the filmmakers, along with Mo Azima, whose video installation blanking on the title of it, it's Down from the Tree, Rumi poem, which is an incredible five-minute video piece that incorporates AI technologies. That'll be on view at the Narrowsburg Union's Digital Gallery, but we're bringing them all together for a panel discussion between 3:30 and 5:30. Then we invite everybody to join us at the Tustin Theater, our home base for the Big Eddy Film Festival, for opening night film, Gizu Dizu, is a Japanese film about a horror-themed punk band who choose to go to the rural countryside to record the world's greatest punk anthem. And I think any of us up here in the Sullivan Catskills and Upper Delaware Valley can relate to that dream of, like, I'm just going to go out into the woods and make something fantastic, get away from all the distractions and focus on my art. So we thought that that was a film that would really speak well to what draws so many of us to the area and also bring a little more international flair to the festival with such a dynamic film. People are going to love it.
It could also be scary there with all the darkness. For Saturday, we talked about the kids' features that are coming up, but also the narrative feature, Jim's Story, which also, I guess, touches on some youth themes as well. Can you talk a bit about Jim's Story?
Absolutely. French film Jim's Story follows a couple and their son who go on vacation, and their vacation ends up being shared with the biological father of their son. Night of time where maybe the relationship wasn't as great as it was. They drifted, but they came back together, and it becomes a lot of conversation around nature versus nurture, and just finding comfort with yourself and your identity. And it's such a beautifully told story. And we're really excited. This was actually a film that we were hoping to bring to the film festival last year, and it unfortunately was booked so that we couldn't get it. But it stayed in our screening panel's mind so strongly that we were able to bring it for this year. So.
We talked about local storytelling on the big screen. Mm-hmm. Also Saturday are the rural shorts featuring someone we happen to know here. But talk about some of the other rural shorts that are there.
This is, if one of our tent pole programs, every year, because we are so fortunate to have such great filmmakers in our community, people who are inspired by our surroundings, have a great program that features Anton Esteban's Hypnoscape, which is a film he wrote and shot with Sydney South, a young Narrowsburgian. People may know his parents, Trish and Phil South, formerly of the Launderette. And we have Elizabeth Ennis's experimental film Bungalow, which looks at the rich past of the bungalow colonies in our area. And one of the programs we're super excited to include is the band Basic Bitches music video, There's No Crying in Baseball, which was shot, cast and produced locally, directed by the incomparable Alex Spott, and was actually a project that was a grant recipient through our statewide community re-grant program. And then we tie it all up in a beautiful bow with a really masterpiece of filmmaking by our friends at JFF Radio Catskill called Catskill Talks. And it is a four-part artist documentary looking at the work of incredible artists in our community, including William Landau, Hasina Brody, Zach Max, and Mike Osterhout, all interviewed by the incredible Patricio Rubio.
Yeah. Speaking of, next Spielberg. Also, Saturday, that's Saturday. There's also a big Eddie 2025 festival party on Saturday. And want to make sure we have time to get to what's happening on Sunday, too. Let's talk about the other highlights you want to make sure we get in.
So, with all this film, you spend a lot of time when you're watching a movie, maybe laughing, maybe crying, but, in the dark. So we want to make sure that people have the time to get together, to meet filmmakers, to share their thoughts on the films they're seeing. So we have a filmmaker and VIP event at Maison Bergon at 6 o'clock. Something that's open to the public. We're so excited to be collaborating with our friends at the Parlor. We'll have Flirty Riot and DJ for the People performing. That goes on from 9 till whenever. And really take the community that we're building over these few days and celebrate and dance and listen to some great music and see some great artistic performances. And then wake up bright and early Sunday for an encore presentation of the Too Short to Suck Festival. This is an incredible project put together by our friends over at New Memories in Parksville. They screened it back in May. And we first did this last year. It expands the dialogue of film that gets presented at a film festival. And each of these shorts are 2 minutes or less. They range from stop action animation to digital to traditional filmmaking. And I believe there's just over 40 filmmakers in the program. So this is going to be a great program for people to see a wide range of things. And since we're doing it at the Parlor Sunday morning starting at 10:30, we'll pair it with some small bites and small tastes, including coffee from Two Queens and some delicious treats. So short films and small bites.
And then at noon, there's a documentary feature supported by Catskill Pride, Move Your Body, The Birth of House.
This film is so amazing. It takes us right into the heart of Chicago in the 1970s with the birth of disco and house music, and this, you know, really shocking event that took place at Wrigley Field that marked the kind of DJ culture's reaction to the rise of disco and house. And it was a Smash Your Records Day. And that event, with a lot of the kind of political and social strife that was going on in Chicago during the 1970s, really was the pressure cooker that led to people in the LGBTQ community and others to really form an art form that felt both home for them and a place where they could express. And that is The Birth of House. And we're really looking forward to having the director and producer of that film joining us. So, and so grateful for Catskill Pride support, as well as some of our other screening sponsors, including Tustin Social, who are sponsoring the closing film of the festival, which is called Future Council. And this is an Australian film that follows a filmmaker who builds a cohort of young environmental activists. These are kids from all over the world who are passionate about advocating for and fighting for their future and the future of our world. And they go on a biodiesel tour across Europe, trying to meet with the heads of various international corporations to both heed the guidance and wisdom of the next generation and consider their global impact. And the film has such a powerful message that we couldn't have thought of a better way to close out the 14th annual Big Eddie Film Festival.
Yep, and you can get all the information about all of the films and events at BigEddieFilmFest.com. We've been talking to Ariel Schamburg, who is the executive director of the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance, which produces the Big Eddie Film Festival each year. This looks like a good one. Thank you, Ariel.
Thank you. Look forward to seeing everybody at the movies.
And we'll take a quick break and come back with the end of summer auction at the Wayne County Arts Alliance. This is Radio Chatskill.
On the next Fresh Air, Elizabeth Gilbert, the best-selling author of Eat, Pray, Love, talks about her first nonfiction book in a decade, All the Way to the River. It's about her intense relationship with her best friend Rhea, a love that she describes as deep and life-changing, but also destructive, marked by addiction and heartbreak. Join us.
Listen to Fresh Air today at 2 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The Wayne County Arts Alliance is wrapping up the season with its end of summer art auction featuring a unique chair as this year's centerpiece. Culture reporter Valerie Manzi spoke with Nadine Kloss-Gannon, chair of the event, about this year's theme.
Good morning, Nadine Kloss-Gannon, and welcome to Radio Chatskill.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
You're here to talk about the end of summer art auction, and this year the items that will be auctioned off are chairs, correct?
Correct.
So tell us about that.
So back in the spring, we were able to obtain roughly 34 sponsors, local businesses, that sponsored a chair, and we had about 35 artists that were given a chair or they had an old chair at home that they used. Our main leading sponsor for the chairs was New Wave Woodworking out of White Mills, Pennsylvania. They had chair frames that were going to be used for a project that never ended up happening. So they donated all the chairs for us. So each artist was given the frame of a chair, and it was free artistic license to design and create anything that they wanted. And each chair was then placed at one of the local business sponsors for the whole summer.
Wow, that sounds like a lot of fun for the artists and for the community too.
Yes. When you have free artistic license, we have chairs that were just strictly painted with pictures on them that were absolutely amazing. But then we had people that turned one into a musical instrument that was down at the Holly Library.
I saw some other wonderful chairs online that were replicas of the paintings of famous artists.
Yes. There's one particular one at the front of the gallery on Main Street in Honesdale, and it's Starry Night and The Pearl all combined into one painting.
And how does one get to see these paintings and know where they are?
So all throughout the summer, our local businesses had trail maps that we created that you could go around and almost do a scavenger hunt, and they were all listed in a map form. It's also on the Wayne County Arts Alliance's website, and we highlighted each artist, each sponsor, and each chair all throughout the summer on our Facebook and Instagram page that you could go back and go through Wayne County Arts Alliance's social media.
And when does this auction begin?
The auction actually begins Wednesday, September 10th at 10 a.m., and it runs for 2 weeks. The closing will be September 24th at 10 p.m. East Coast time.
And how does one go about bidding?
So you can go to the Wayne County Arts Alliance's website, or you can find biddingowl.com/WCAA chairs. And that will link you right into the website, and you will fill out as a login member, and you can scroll through all of the chairs and pick your favorite. The opening bid starts at $75, and if you want to buy now and not be in one of the bidding wars, you can buy now for $175.
Oh, interesting. So we have a lot of options.
Yes, you do.
And how long have you been involved with this effort on the part of the Wayne County Arts Alliance?
This is my second summer project that I have been the chair for. Last year we did our garden totem poles, and this year it is the chair project.
What drew you to this particular project?
I was involved in the arts, and I thought it was a great idea to join the Wayne County Arts Alliance, and they needed a volunteer, so I volunteered. And I just ran with it.
Are you having fun?
I am. I do enjoy the arts, and it's been a great pleasure to drive around all of Wayne County to photograph each chair and actually get to look at them.
And what is the web address?
WayneCountyArtsAlliance.org.
Okay, well, thank you, Nadine. And is there anything else you would like to add?
I just hope that everybody enjoyed the summer project by having the colorful chairs throughout Wayne County, and that they're all bid on and they all go home to a nice new home or garden or front porch.
Me too. Thank you again.
Thank you.
And the Wayne County Arts Alliance chair auction summer art project is ending September 24th. That is Wednesday. There's more information at WayneCountyArtsAlliance.org. And that's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support comes from Catskills Property Care, offering full property care year-round for commercial and residential properties in Sullivan County, including snow plowing, landscaping, property checkups, and more. Information at CatskillsPropertyCare.com. And from the Calicoon Theater, an updated vintage movie theater with new film releases, live music, and more. CalicoonTheater.com. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
You know the feeling.
Someone offers you what they think is constructive criticism. And you immediately go on the defensive.
I definitely, initially, was like, no, you're wrong. So, I mean, yeah, I definitely felt some defensiveness in that moment.
Why our minds resist feedback and how to become more receptive to it. This week on Hidden Brain from NPR. Today at 1 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Today's forecast, very nice, some sun breaking through the clouds later with a high of 71. Clouds tonight, low of 55. We'll get some much-needed rain tomorrow afternoon through Thursday afternoon. Looks like a shower and thunderstorm in the afternoon and evening tomorrow with high 74. Cloudy with a shower Wednesday, and showers around still Thursday with high 64. On Point is next.
WJFF Jeffersonville. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.